Birth, Chapter 14. The Gulf of Mexico is hot and humid most of the time, but once you get a few miles offshore, there aren't any bugs. Every once in a while, a breeze comes by that helps the sweat cool off the body. There are more than 25,000 oil rigs in the Gulf. Most are rusty old wrecks, long since abandoned. But no one does anything about them. They get pounded by storms, and seabirds use them for respite, which makes most of them appear covered in bird crap. But the Deepwater Horizon was one of the most modern rigs ever built. It had every safety device. It had excellent living quarters for the crew that operated it. It produced more oil than just about any rig ever built in the Gulf area. It was also the summer job for one Orphan Bayazed. He was just 19 years old. That made everyone on the rig nervous. There wasn't any dead weight on an oil rig. Slackers were known to have accidents. It is a dangerous, slippery, stationary ship in one of the deepest and most temperamental seas on Earth. More than 700 Spanish barge chains loaded with gold have been sunk in storms on the Gulf. Thousands of roughnecks have been injured or killed on rigs all over that body of water. But as dawn approached this spring day, it was remarkably calm. The sea was as smooth as glass, and the sky was clear with the belt of Orion shimmering in the dark sky above. Orphan was on the first shift watch with his roommate, Judge. Some people called him the Judge, but the name wasn't real. He was a Kelly technician, which was one of the most dangerous jobs on the rig. He also had been working rigs for more than 10 years. That was very rare for a roughneck. The work was filthy beyond compare, but the rig had to stay clean, especially the deep water. It meant lots of work and excellent pay. 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off was a hard schedule for even young men, but it meant the company had to maintain 2 entire crews. They had to keep them safe on the rig, and they had to make sure they returned at the end of their 2-week shore time. Orphan had a slight advantage that secured him a spot on the best-paying rig in the British Petroleum fleet. His father grew up in the oil business in Iraq. He came to the States when OPEC took control of the Middle East's oil-producing capabilities and nationalized all the assets. He was able to move most of his assets as well, which enabled him to purchase the controlling interest in the Los Angeles Times. Ever since, the publication became an oil-friendly organization. The relationship was good for both of them, and now it would be good to Orphan. The platform was 396 feet long and 256 feet wide and could operate in waters up to 8,000 feet deep, to a maximum drill depth of 30,000 feet. Press releases from Transocean stated the platform had historically been used for deeper wells, including the deepest underwater gas and oil well in history at 35,055 feet. It was truly the finest rig on the sea. The first shift starts at midnight and goes until 8 a.m. By then, the sun is up and scorching, and it is a great time to hit morning mess and then go to sleep. So far, the spring had been easy work. He was working in the monitor room that watched the blowout preventers and the stress on the rig anchors. It meant reports and rounds and clipboards and reading gauges by hand. The company had learned the hard way not to trust the remote monitor systems completely. They wanted human ears and eyes looking at things every hour. It meant walking each platform from the sea all the way to the top towers. There were gauges on top of the transducers that sent the pressures, temperatures, gas leak detectors, and strain values to a central computer screen. Operators would watch the screen to make sure the rig was operating within limits and making money. Patrols would validate the readings by filling out clipboards with the same readings from those local readouts. If they turned up different, the Bradley Bonner, a huge German master technician, sent maintenance to find out why the very next day. Orphan and the judge had just finished walking more than 1.5 miles around the platforms and climbing more than 400 feet of stairs to reach the highest tower above the rig. The view was amazing on a clear night just before dawn. The sun would begin lighting the sky far from the horizon, making it turn a different shade of blue every single minute. Orphan would keep himself awake by forcing himself to try to see the horizon appear. One minute it would be washed in the blackness of the sea and the starlit sky. The next minute there would be a slight edge of blackness next to a deep purple glow as the sun made its way around the planet. Sometimes the Geminids or the Leonids or the Perseids would splatter the dawn sky with meteors that could easily be seen without the light pollution of the city. It was magical. Even at the age of 19, he knew that life moves very quickly, and never let a night like this go unnoticed. "It's kind of nice up here tonight," said Judge. He wasn't a man of many words. Orphan had tried many times to get him to talk about his experiences or give him advice on things. Most people considered themselves lucky if Judge said, "Eh," while passing him in a hallway or on a catwalk. "Sometimes I think like I'm flying when I'm up here. I can hear birds or seals or a boat blow its horn in the night, and the stars are amazing," said Orphan. He was a football player in high school. He really didn't like working on the oil rigs in the summer. It wasn't like he needed the money, but his dad wanted him to learn the value of a dollar. He wanted him to learn the business. Well, what he knew about it made him determined to have nothing to do with it, as long as he was able to make his own decisions in life. And he didn't wish this too loudly, though. His older brother had wished it one night when arguing with his dad about dating or street racing or something. He was sent to live with his uncle in Iraq when he graduated from school. They got mail from time to time. His brother regretted that argument. Orphan decided he was never making that wish aloud. He would work the rigs. This one was not too bad. It was new, it was state-of-the-art, and it was very good money. He would be able to buy a new Harley-Davidson after this summer. There it was. There was the dark line between the sea and the deep purple sky. "Whoa! Look at that, will you?" said Orphan. "Another day, another dollar," cliched Judge. "Yeah, you can say that again. How far do you think we can see from up here?" "Oh, I guess about 20 miles or so," said Judge. "Sometimes you can see a supply ship an hour before it gets here." "I'm amazed how long it will stay dark for so long. And then, like in 5 minutes, the horizon starts getting light blue and then orange, and then it gets..." "Hey, what's that?" "What?" "That. Those two big humps. Unless I'm hallucinating, that looks like a tidal wave." "What? No way. We're in 5,000 feet of water. Waves like those would be under the surface. Those are like big," said Orphan with a squeak in his voice. "Give me that radio, kid." Orphan handed him the walkie-talkie clipped to his belt. They never had used it in the whole time he'd been on the rig. He never really knew what to do with it. "Control, this is Judge," he said, pressing the talk button. He waited about 10 seconds, but Orphan could tell something was wrong. Judge had the most experience of anyone on that rig, and nothing rattled him. They had a hydrogen sulfide alarm his first week there. It nearly made him piss when it went off. Everyone was falling down and scrambling for the mask locker on the Kelly deck, which was the giant motor that turned the drill steel and supported more than 2 miles of drill pipe that stretched all the way to the bottom and then deep into the hole they had drilled to the oil and gas reserves trapped in volcanic formations. Hydrogen sulfide is deadly poisonous. One breath will put you on your knees and make you see stars. The next breath, and you are unconscious. Within 2 minutes, you are dead. It normally comes up through the drilling mud that keeps the high pressures from blowing through while drilling, but this rig used blow-off preventers, which captured the pressure deep under the sea where the water pressure could help contain the gases. It made the rig very clean and very dangerous to operate. Judge simply took a breath, walked over to the locker, and put his mask on like he was donning a ball cap. Then he helped the others get their masks and put them on. Each mask is fitted to the roughneck's face when he first arrives. During orientation, the wrong mask could get you dead. "Control, come in," repeated Judge. "Go ahead, Judge," said the gravelly voice on the other end. "Sound the alarm. We have a wave." "A wave? There's no storm. Radar shows it's smooth as..." Oh, hell. The alarm went off like a rock concert had just been plugged in with the volume on full blast. Orifan gripped the railing because he felt like the sound would knock him to the surface 400 feet below. "Follow me," said Judge. He put two hands on the handrails of the metal stair in front of them and swung his feet up in front of him onto the rails as well. Judge slid down 20 stairs in about 3 seconds. Orphan was too scared to try it, even though it looked easy enough. He wished he had time to practice something like that, when the alarm wasn't piercing his eardrums in the pre-dawn darkness. He shuffled his new boots down the stairs, but Judge was already running along the catwalk for the next stairs. They had about 300 feet to go to reach the Kelly deck. "Come on, move your ass, rookie," shouted Judge. The doors flung open from the dorm building, and men began pouring out. Some had pants on only and were struggling to put their boots on. The deck was painted diamond plate steel, and it was no place for bare feet. The edges of the 4x8 sheets were sharp and could easily lacerate bare skin. Bonner emerged, like a Viking. His red helmet was strapped on, and he was fully dressed. Orphan wondered for a second if he slept that way, but then he realized that second shift was starting for maintenance at 7 a.m., just 2 hours away. He came from breakfast, which he did not get to eat. The rig began to move, slightly at first. Orphan couldn't believe it. The rig weighed thousands of tons, and it was stabilized by 8 sea anchors with automatic tethers. The first swell touched the bottom of the Kelly deck, making the entire rig shudder like giant fingers strumming the pillars. The sound was deep and sickening, like steel was no match for water. He could hear equipment slamming against the welded plates of the deck from underneath. Glass was breaking somewhere. Orphan was far behind Judge now. Bonner was barking and pointing with one hand as he grabbed men like little kids and threw them with the other hand. "To the boats! Get to the boats! Don't worry about that! Abandon ship!" he bellowed. The rig was listing badly now, and he was thankful he wasn't up on that tower. It was whipping like a fishing rod up there near Orion's belt. He was nearly to the Kelly deck now, just 2 more staircases to go. There was an enormous rumble below as the second swell rocked the rig back the other way. It was the casing of the well. It was failing far below the surface. He knew in a few seconds the full force of thousands of pounds of gas pressure would burst to the surface. There would be oil. There would be methane. He worried that he could not hold his breath because he was scared and he was running. He threw his feet up on the rail and slid down the next set of stairs. This was a long run. He had to run all along the west side of the rig, turn the corner, and run another 50 yards to reach the next set of stairs that reached the Kelly deck. He looked over the inside rail and could see Judge was running toward Bonner. Two old salts, he thought. They would get everyone off. Just then the corner of the dorm building blew away in a giant fireball. It was silent for a second or two, and then the heat and the sound reached him. He tried to shut his eyes and hold on to the rail, but he could not miss the prefabricated wall section strike Judge mid-step and wipe him from existence. It smashed through the transfer pump cage and took the far corner of the rig out to sea about 200 feet. He opened his eyes and could see Bonner struggling to his feet. His helmet was gone, and there was some blood on his face, but he was still shouting and still grabbing and still pointing, like a captain going down with his ship. He ordered every man to safety, and then, as though he could read Orphan's mind, he looked up and saw him gripping the yellow steel handrail like it had electricity coursing through it. "Get down from there! Come here right now!" he shouted like a giant. Orphan tossed himself toward the staircase and swung his feet over the rails and slid to the Kelly deck. He hit the deck running and reached Bonner in what seemed like a few seconds. Bonner gripped him by the shoulders, and he felt like a little boy in his control. His hands were like iron, and he felt like nothing could move him from this spot, not even the fire. "Let's go," said Bonner. He probably knew his dad, maybe. It seemed like he was under special care as they ran toward the stairs that led to the docks far below, the Kelly deck by the edge of the rig. There were Zodiacs in dry dock all the time. They were fueled, stocked with emergency supplies and first aid kits. They were lashed in place, but they could be untied and could be slid into the water and boarded in less than a minute. There was enough for both shifts in case they had to abandon the rig during a shift change. That was a best practice shared with the deep water. There were thousands of ghost rigs out there in the Gulf, and there were ghosts on those rigs. Lessons learned. And the company spared no expense to make sure we could get away safely. They ran as fast as they could, which was like running in molasses. The smoke was getting thick now as the oil from below mixed with the fire raging with the natural gas. They could see the chaos below them. The Zodiacs had mostly been strewn around by the two giant surges that came through at perhaps 100 miles an hour. It was like two semi-trucks had slammed through the place. There were clouds of smoke and heat, making everything slick and black. Orphan coughed and tried to take a deep breath as Bonner grabbed another man who had fallen. "Get those boats in the water," he bellowed. It echoed off the floor above them and off the water 40 feet still below them. The men looked up and noticed Bonner. One man ran over and busted the glass on a case on one of the twisted support pillars. He retrieved an axe and ran to the boat, still lashed to its ramp, 10 feet above the water. He chopped the ropes and the boat slid into the water. The motor and entire back of the Zodiac submerged for a few seconds, and Orphan panicked, thinking the boat would sink. But it bobbed back to the surface and started to drift away from the rig. Two more men jumped from 10 feet above the surface and grabbed the edge of the Zodiac. They pulled themselves into the boat, while a dozen more crew members jumped into the water for that boat. He chopped another and another, each one filling with men and drifting away from the rig. "Stick together! The rescue boats will find us if we stick together," shouted Bonner. Orphan could hear the starters trying to start the big black Mercury motors on the back of each Zodiac. They were brand new, top-of-the-line, 4-stroke, 200-horse motors. Always the best, Orphan thought. There were still 200 men hanging off the rails below, waiting for the boats to hit the water. "Get down there, son," said Bonner as he turned and looked at him with the same look his coach used to give before saying, "Get me that football, son." He hit the stairs and slid down to the boat deck below. Bonner stayed on top so that he could order the chaos from above. The men could hear him, and they felt like he was watching over them. The next explosion took 4 pieces of diamond plate and ripped it from the deck. It twisted the stair off at the bolts like they were made of plastic and slammed them into the sea below. There was a boat. Someone pushed him, and he was in the water. He couldn't swim for some reason, and had a hard time making the surface after plunging from 10 feet above the water. He was holding his breath, but then he realized he still had his boots on. He remembered snorkeling for fish off La Jolla one time, and he kicked off his fins. He only had his rubber booties on so that he could climb the rocks to get out of the water. A wave washed him back away from the rock. and the rubber booties just slipped through the water as he kicked, but didn't do any good for propulsion. Same thing, he thought. He pulled hard with his arms and reached the surface to take a breath. He stroked to the boat a few feet away. There was fire on the water not far away. The alarm had quit. It was probably blown away. The men in the boat already pulled him in. He was amazingly weak, he thought. He looked up on the twisted boat deck and there was no one. His heart sunk. And then he heard that voice. It was lacking in its power, but it was there. Stay together and go west, away from the rig. Stay away from the burning oil. It was Bonner. He was on another boat about 50 feet away. They were going to live. The mercury rumbled to life and the boat surged out to follow the other boats already underway. The sun was cresting the horizon, except for the dark billows of smoke pushing east. There was not a cloud in the sky.